it's very, very, very nice to see you all. Missed you so much. I would remember every Tuesday, it's Tuesday. And then I'd think, but the time is so different. 9 hours difference. So I couldn't quite figure out what you all were doing, but it probably wasn't what I was doing. So it's like I think everybody is starting to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning over there right now. It's that much of it. Donna Lynn has been filling me in a little bit on the way-seeking mind stories. I'm so sorry I missed that. Of course, that's how it works, but I'm glad you all had a chance to do that. And I had a wonderful time. It was really, really fine. Two completely different things. I would think it's all Zen, but one was in a little wooden hut that used to have the cows in it, all by candlelight. There was very little ambient light. There were little windows on the sides, very small ones. So there were these big tall candles that they make, and they had lamps with candles in them all over the zendo. Sometimes they were not very many, and then when we were going to chant, then they'd bring out the chanting cards and everybody would walk around and light the candles. And eating orioki by candlelight. Just trying to see what you got in your bowl. Very interesting, very beautiful. And it's the kind of sesshin where nobody leaves, because it's up on a mountain and everybody has to walk in with their backpack on with everything that they need for a week of sitting. So once you're up there, having walked through the snow, you don't just drop out and run to town or come for a few days. You come and commit for the whole thing. And that's very nice. It's rare. In the many places that I sit, it almost never happens. But that situation closes the door for at least that time. And it's the New Year sit, so we did the 108 bells. They have a big, beautiful big brass bell and a big log that goes against it, so we all took turns throwing the log against the brass bell. And then they had an enormous bonfire in the middle of the snow. Huge branches all piled up in a teepee that just went up. I don't know, it was like an explosion. And then the old lady who runs the place and I and the people who help her, while everybody else was standing around the fire, we all went back inside and had a little champagne. It was very sweet. And then Felsentor in Switzerland was so different. Big, wide windows looking out over the mountains and the lake below. Lots and lots of light. And incredible food. In Austria, I kept remembering the wonderful cheese and the nuts and all the things that you get at Felsentor. And it was a practice period, so we had lots of sitting, but other things to do too. Big work periods, lots of leisure, study time, discussion time. We were in silence until the discussion and then dinner. And at dinner we could talk. And so suddenly there would be this storm of talking as we all got to know each other. my job for those Felsentor days has been for the last 3 years to mentor a Shuso. A Shuso being a head practicer. Vanya and Koban ordained a number of people who have been teachers over there in Germany and Austria and Switzerland for quite a long time. Usually Shuso becomes Shuso long or before she or he becomes a teacher. But in this case, they'd all become teachers and had been transmitted. They were all wearing brown robes. So they were all there already, but without having ever gone through the ceremony. So Vanya had them come year by year and train, quote unquote, which meant that I and that person, last year it was Sister Tracia, the Franciscan nun. This year it was a Protestant minister from northern Germany, a big guy. He was very big, very loud, very fast. He did everything very, very fast. He really didn't slow down those whole 2 weeks. And so he and I would walk to the Zendo together and walk up and put on our robes together. He didn't know how to wear his robes, so that was one of my jobs, was to help him learn how to do that and learn how to do the business at the altar of lighting the incense. And we lit the incense for each other. One time it would be his turn to serve the altar and I would give him the incense, and then vice versa. So we did everything that way as a team for 2 weeks. It was quite remarkable. And people came and went a lot. People from town, people from little villages not far away, people from Germany, Vienna, very far away. It was kind of exotic, and it's such an incredible place. Very different, but zazen every day, off and on all day long. So although the ambiance was different, the practice was exactly the same. Except we chanted the Heart Sutra in German. I would read it. I still can't do it, really, but I tried. I tried to do the echo and all those things in German as much as I could. It was fun, that part. So we had a long 2 weeks, and then the two men who run Felsentor took me and a gal from the Boulder Sangha on a jaunt through the Alps by car to the lake country, Lake Como, Lake Maggiore, Lake Lugano. In the snow, everything all frozen, the palm trees with snow on top. It was, and all the trees were bare, the kind of bare, real winter trees that were just black shapes against the gray sky. I just loved it. Being in California, I just was thrilled by all the snow and the gray and the grimness. And we stayed in Lugano, which is still in Switzerland, but took the train to Milano and spent a whole day walking around being tourists, just being silly tourists. So that was a sort of crown to the, or the, it was a gift. It was a gift from them. And it was very fun. And then she and I spent the night at Vanya's. Vanya sends his best to everyone. And he liked having a sabbatical so much that he decided to have another one. So, sounds good. So he's doing extremely well. So that's where I was. I'm not going back, probably, at least not for next year. So that's kind of a disappointment, and it's okay. The disappointing part is about Felsentor, because Vanya had created that two-week practice period for the benefit of the staff. They have a staff of 7 or 8 people who mostly sit. And so he thought they should have a time for themselves to be able to practice. And then anybody in town who wanted to could come and join. So that's what we've been doing. But it didn't pay for itself. It didn't make enough money. And so the directors decided that they needed to do something else. The staff was very disappointed, and the town people were very disappointed also, and I too. But it's a business, of course. It's hugely expensive to run a hotel on top of a mountain like that. So that part's over. Pepi said, and Purang, she said, year after next, if you and I are still alive, you can come back. So she and I are the same age. So maybe so, maybe so. And maybe some of you can come along. It's very fun to have people coming from here. Helena came from Boulder, and my friend Chris Bricini, who's one of the founders of Jikoji, who had stopped being involved with Zen for the last 20 years at least, decided that she would come and sit the Pureg Sesshin, and she loved it. In fact, she's coming to the Floating Zendo Sesshin in August now, and she, there is somebody else, somebody from Salzburg, who she got to know very well, and that person is going to come to the Floating Zendo Sesshin also. They say now. I don't know how. We'll see. But it was very nice to have this kind of connection. We are all connected. It's nice to actually see it and feel it. So that's my story. I brought chocolate that I can't find and cookies that I did find. they're called Japonaise. They're made in traditional Swiss, it says, but they're called Japanese cookies. So that seemed appropriate somehow. and I hope they're not totally mashed, because I haven't dared to open it. Oh, I do believe they're fine. So I don't know, are there questions about European Zazen? Practice in the snow. Thirty minutes mostly.
Maybe let this start with one.
Oh, you pass it around. No, I have one.
Thirty minutes then.
40 minutes before breakfast, and then 30 minutes afterward. Yes. Yeah, the Doksan in Pureg was in this tiny room. very dark, with a beautiful ancient Buddha about this high that Vanya had found somewhere. It was kind of spooky. It was such a small room and so dark, but also a big candle up on top so that there was enough light to just see each other's faces. And at Felsentor, there's a Dokusan room, which is upstairs from the Zendo, so, and it's very, it's small also, but very well lighted and very beautiful. That whole Zendo is so gorgeous. Completely Japanese, beautiful wood, just all plain wood throughout. Cool, fresh, wide, spacious. It's almost too much, you know. It's so perfect.
How popular is Zen in those? I mean, when I think of Zen, I don't think of like Switzerland or like how did Zen get over there?
Oh, Buddha! It's a hotbed of Buddhism, and lots of Tibetan Buddhism going on there. Lots and lots of it, all over Europe, really. But Zen too. Zen also. Reb Anderson goes there every year. All the Zen teachers go. Joan Halifax is there every year. They host all the American Zen teachers, and also there are lots of them in Germany as well, and Switzerland.
Is there a particular like teacher from Japan that kind of like, you know, like Suzuki Roshi, who came to San Francisco? And
yeah, Deshi Maru is he was one of Kodo Suwaki's students. He was a businessman who didn't take up Zen until the middle of his life, and he eventually ended up in Paris as the bishop of Europe for the Soto school in Japan. Koban knew him and sent me to see him a couple of times when I was going to Paris, and he wasn't in Paris when I was there, so I never did meet him. But he has had a tremendous effect on Zen growing in Europe. And Koban, of course. Koban's last 11 years or so were mostly spent in Europe as a teacher. He did a lot of teaching that I have no real knowledge of at all. Yeah. Well, where are we? Do we have time? We have time to read something. So did you all read something while I was gone? No. Okay. So we should be at about 15 of book 2 on page 43, which is very short.
In the evening talk, he said, "The fact that most people do not flee the world appears as if they were attached to their own bodies. But the fact is that they are not thinking of their own bodies. This means that they have no foresight. Also, it is because of failure to meet a good teacher."
Even if one hopes for gain and sustenance, if one does obtain the benefit of eternal bliss, even if one wishes to have the offerings of dragons and celestial beings and considers name and repute, if one does attain honor as a Buddha or a patriarch and obtain the epithet of an ancient worthy, wise people in later generations should respect and look up to it when they hear of it.
Well, I don't know. This is very strange, actually. People who do not flee the world appears as if they were attached to their own bodies, but the fact is they're not thinking of their own bodies. I don't know what that means. Does anybody know what that means?
Well, it says it means that they have no foresight.
Yeah.
I
don't know whether that's true
or not.
It's very strange.
I remember you saying part of the practice is paying attention to our bodies.
Yes.
That to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
Seems if you're not, there's certain elements of the world that you're not aware of, like, you know, impermanence, how everything passes and goes through and, you know, oozes. And what was, so there's no foresight, right? So people get, if you're not aware of that kind of thing, then it could come as a shock when something does.
I see. Change. Yeah, that works. That works.
I sense not having a teacher then is also having this support, or having a teacher helping on. Notice the body, or sitting, or helping with the studies.
That's right. That's right. It's so like us to forget that we're bodies, and in practice especially, but running around the world, we run around the world with stories in our minds without realizing what's carrying us, our feet and our legs, our knees, our hips. And our body isn't a vehicle, it's the world itself, the life and breath of the world. So indeed, that's certainly the case. And a teacher just brings you back over and over to where you are and what you are. At least that's the best. We get caught by all kinds of ideas in Zen, but really just to come back and be the body again. What a treat. Even in duress, even if we're, you know, really sick, and we tell our teacher, the doctor says I'm going to die. And the teacher says we all have to die. That's what a body is. But a body is living. That's how it is. It brings us over and over into the mysteriousness of what this is to be alive. The wonder of it. Oh, thank you, both of you. So even if we have gaining ideas, he's saying, and through the gaining ideas achieve something, that's okay. But it's not that wise people in later generations respect the person. They look up to it when they hear of it. So it's the attainment itself. There is no person involved. Well, this is very short, but kind of complicated. Jane?
I was thinking today about what we talked about in Sega, about on Saturday, about the subject, and how we might be afraid of dying, losing our body. And one of us suggested that it was, in fact, you're not losing yourself, you're, in a way, you're returning to the permanent. The place where we came from, that's not even putting timeline on it, but anyway, that there is the foremost sense, I guess it was that another sense, that returning to forms.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a loss so much as a return. I think that's also what we're talking about now. The people in daily life, they're not thinking about that aspect of the body, but the body shows us the form of the system we come from, and that's where the lack of person is. We don't see that eventually that form of the system will be shown. Eventually it could happen anytime.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. My male person delivered. Sometimes if there's a package, she drives down my driveway and beeps her horn, and then I come out and pick up my mail. And I went to pick it up yesterday, and she burst into tears and said her husband had just fallen down dead just a couple of weeks ago. And she said it was utterly unexpected. And every time it happens, you know, we wake up and think, oh, but then we slide back down and sort of forget about it usually, or try not to think about it so much. It's not good to think about it so much in the sense of always having it looming in front of us. It's more to think about it in order to relish the moment that we have. I remember when I was sewing the first Okesa at Green Gulch, I was sewing with someone who was dying of AIDS, and a very nice guy, one of Blanche Hartman's students. And I had just undergone big radiation treatment, so my body thought it was dying also. So the two of us were sewing away like mad, trying to get our Okesas finished in time. But our feeling about it was just enormous gratitude to have this time to do what we were doing. And when we took a break, we'd go outside and we'd just groove on the grass and the flowers and how beautiful the world was. And it was wonderful. It was more appreciation than I've ever felt for the world and for life. So I think that's what the teaching is about. Not that it's the grim reaper is waiting for us, but that life is so precious. And this is our chance. This is it.
The other side of that too is maybe fear is the opposite of gratitude. I don't know, but I think on Saturday when that really was an arrow that struck home, when we discussed how the formlessness is what was in us anyway, and I could see the fear of death and how that, I'm not quite sure yet how that. But I could tell it crowds out a lot of, takes up too much room, not sure how it operates. So I think that's the other side too, the gratitude, but also uncovering.
Yes.
Fear.
Yes. Fear based on an idea, not the reality.
Dude, it's true.
Also, isn't there like a notion of clinging? In fear, to me,
not being able to let it go. Yeah, it's scary. Well, it's 8 o'clock. I haven't changed my watch yet. It's 5 o'clock in Switzerland.